Abodes of Dathros, and awful realms of insatiable death, and you, most cruel of the brothers, to whom the shades are given to serve, and the eternal punishments of the damned obey you. You, Hades, throw open the palace of the underworld in answer to my knocking. Throw open the silent places and empty void of stern Persephone, and send forth the multitude that lurk in hollow night. Let the ferryman row back across the Styx with groaning bark. O daughter of Perseus, O Hecate, queen of shades, hasten all together, and let there be for the shades but one fashion of return to the light. And the cloud-wrapped Arcadian with rod power led in separate throng the pious denizens of Elysium. But for those who died in crime, who in Erebus, as among the seed of Cadmus, are most in number, be thou their leader. Tisiphone, go on before with snake thrice brandished and blazing yew branch, and throw open the light of day. Nor let Cerberus interpose his heads and turn aside the ghosts that lack the light. Prayer for calling upon the dead. Welcome to the Feast of Torches. I'm your host Azazel, and on today's episode we'll be feasting upon the topic of spirits and spirit communication. Now during this time of Samhain, as the veils have thinned, a lot of people seem to have this understanding that, oh, now that the veils have thinned, I can get some of that spooky ookie. And while this is true to an extent, the spirits are available to us all year round, but during this time of year it may be easier to bring these entities forth. For the most part, it is my understanding that the veils tend to be thinner for more ancestral type spirits during this time of year, while for other spirits, it's neither better or worse to commune with them. Something that I think that is also forgotten as well is that there is a flow to these spiritual fluctuations, so to speak. So just as the veil is thin during the time of Samhain, it would seem that the veil is also thin during its opposite, which would be Beltane. But instead of it being the ancestors, for example, and this one definitely varies depending on culture, but one I've heard the most is that it's the best time to commune with the Fae, if you so choose to ruin your life like that, but hey, to each their own. Alright, so first things first, what classifies as a spirit? Now, dictionary.com says that the definition of a spirit is the principle of conscious life, the vital principle in humans, animating the body or mediating between body and soul. Dictionary.com also says that it is the incorporeal part of humans, present in spirit, though absent in body. Now, let's dissect that definition a little bit. According to some modern Christians, and to be honest with you, I will acknowledge my ignorance on this, as Christianity isn't really something that I know a whole lot about, just speaking from my own experience with people I've known that consider themselves Christian. But there are so many different flavors, and none of them seem to agree on anything. So from what I've gathered, a spirit can be angelic, demonic, or human. But the Holy Spirit is none of these things because it's an extension of God. How that makes sense, I have no idea. Now, something to also take into consideration is that Christianity didn't always have this strict mentality of what classified a spirit. Even if you look at books like Agrippa or other various grimoires, you can see these people who identify as Christians, Catholics, had much more of an open view of what might classify as a spirit, which could be seen as broken down into categories. You have your quote-unquote earth spirits, which might include some chthonic entities or ancestors, and then you have your quote-unquote watery spirits, which might include various spirits as well. And according to the Tumblr, the Red Wing Briar, river spirits are almost always looking to fuck shit up. So if you rile them up and then feed them a name, they'll lay someone the fuck out for you. Do with that information what you will. Feast of Torches podcast lays any and all harm to be a result of Red Wing Briar and not me. Anyway, so a lot of spirits might qualify to be under some sort of elemental. But then you have your celestial spirits, and for me, that includes planetary, angelic, and some divine beings as well. Now, divine beings, if you look at any culture, most forms of divinity cover a broad range of many aspects of life. I personally do consider gods and such to be also a type of spirit, while others may view them to be their own separate thing. Depending on your own personal practice or magical traditions, however, where spirits may fall in the proverbial tree may differ. Please see your HR department for further questions. Now, how do we communicate with these spirits? For hundreds, if not thousands of years, we as humans have been trying to perfect the art of spirit communication and conjuration. In the past couple years, I've made it a goal of mine to explore these methods much deeper. At the time, I didn't really feel my practice had much emphasis on the involvement of spirits. The more I thought about this, I came to the realization that this isn't necessarily true. I've technically been practicing how to conjure spirits into my circle space since I was 13. But I will admit that I just wasn't that much of a focus onto actually bringing these beings into my circle. We all, I'm sure, have seen The Craft at this point, and remember Sarah calling upon the powers of Mother and Earth in the Watchtowers of the North. Now, while obviously this scene had a lot of movie magic and wind howling happening, I think at a young age it definitely imprinted on me to focus on the words being said and not so much on bringing in those spirits. You say the thing, and then you move on, then you say the other thing, and then you move on, repeat until you're done, and boom, magic sparkles. Now, we all love to imagine that's all it takes, but sadly, the spirits and gods need to actually be present for you to speak with them and involve them. This is why I created those elemental meditation episodes, so that you may gain a better understanding of these entities that you're allowing in your sacred space. Now, on page 11 of Living Spirits by B.J. Swain, he says, quote, "Many of us have moments in our lives where we encounter these spirits or the phases of reality in which these spirits reside, incidentally or by accident. Some people write them off, others are afraid of them and bury them away, but people recognize their reality, and of those that do, some are inspired to look for more, to understand that contact or initiate it themselves, possibly even use it for their benefit or for the benefit of those around them. In traditional cultures, some people naturally found ways to interact with these spirits, who may have been more prevalently in communication. Other people, through their experiences or through initiations or through the conditions of their birth, gained greater power and authority to mediate the world of spirits and the world of mankind. As we move through history, many cultures retain this information with the spirit world. In Europe, under the sway of Christianity, these interactions became formalized and specialized among clerical sorcerers within the priesthood. But like most cultures with formal functionaries who worked with their spirits, folk magicians, witches, and sorcerers remained who worked with a broader range of the spirit world and less formally with those parts which were held officially for the priesthood." End quote. Now, as much as we like to rag on those crazy Christians, it's because of them that we have some of those rituals to this day, many of which can be found in a variety of grimoires, such as the Key of Solomon, Grimoarium Verum, Le Petit Albert, the Grand Grimoire, and one of my personal favorites being an excellent book of The Art of Magic. Not saying that solely because it features my namesake, Azazel, however amazing that is. And forgive me if this concept is also seen in other grimoires, but for one of the things that I found most fascinating about this text was mostly the necromancy. But in this case, it's used specifically to contact dead magicians, one of whom was shockingly Adam, the first man. They would contact these spirits through the use of an intermediary spirit, which in this case was Azazel. And in the case of the Guisha, Vasago was used. Throughout the grimoires and even in certain cultures, there are many methods of communing with these spirits. Now, how exactly do we interact with these spirits, you may ask? And one of the main methods that I've seen used is divination. One of the methods most commonly used would be scrying. Now, the dictionary definition of scrying says that it's the act of foretelling the future using a crystal ball or other reflective object or surface. Now, this isn't exactly the truth in practice, even though this may be what Hollywood believes scrying to be. As far as I've been able to tell, this originates with the concept of drawing spirits into crystals from Johannes Trithemius, in which you would perform the conjuration to a crystal ball that is above what is called the table of practice while holding an ebony wand inscribed with the names of God. Another example of this is the Black Mirror scrying, in which it is said that the Aztec priest used them to conjure visions and make prophecies of the future. Obsidian mirrors were used ritually to spiritually access the Aztec underworld and communicate with the realm of the dead. They were said to be used for a ruler to see the future and for others to see themselves look back at them. This method was also put into practice by John Dee in his Enochian experiments with Edward Kelly. A version of this method can also be used by switching out a black mirror for a dark or blackened bowl filled with water, as we've seen many times in pop culture like Halloween Town and Hocus Pocus, where the witches would gather around the cauldron to foretell the future or just check up on people. For me personally, using black mirror is one of my favorite methods of spirit communication. Within the practice of using a black mirror for scrying, traditionally in ceremonial methods, a seer is used as a main person to be in actual communion with the spirit upon conjuration. This person can be a medium of sorts, however, it doesn't necessarily have to be. In a lot of grimoires, a virgin woman or a child was often used to act as a seer, but I personally don't think that's 100% necessary, as I myself have been able to take on that role on occasion. Another method of communion with spirits, specifically divine spirits, is theurgy. Now, Pierre A. Riffard is a French philosopher who defines theurgy as a type of magic. It consists of a set of magical practices performed to evoke benevolent spirits in order to see them or know them, or in order to influence them, for instance, by forcing them to animate a statue, to inhabit a human being, such as a medium, or to disclose mysteries. An aspect of theurgy is, well, something known as aspecting, or divine possession. It is said that there are four different levels to aspecting. The first and the lightest is enhancement. Here, experiences are close to normal. One is in control of one's emotions, but sensing things in a more intensified way. Language becomes more poetic. The second is inspiration. One is still in control, but it feels like something is coming through. In this state, people can often talk about things without having had knowledge of them before. The third state is one of integration, which some refer to this as being the actual state of aspecting. This is when people speak as the god or goddess. Some describe this as feeling their personality steps aside from half of their space to allow for someone else to come in. Afterwards, the person may have some memory of what happened, but usually can't recount all of the experience. The fourth level is full transpossession. People do things they can't normally, such as speak in tongues or do physical things requiring great strength. Afterwards, there may be no conscious awareness of what occurred. I've described some of my own experience with this method in the latest episode of Seeking Witchcraft with Ashley and Tiana, where we discussed her spooky stories. As I've said in that episode, the practice of aspecting has been around for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. In antiquity, we see this looking at the oracles at Delphi, who would essentially perform this divine possession in order to give messages from Apollo to the locals. In looking at some African traditional religions, we see this practice done as well, when practitioners are mounted by Oshun or Elegua. Other methods that can be used when communicating with spirits are usually like tarot, the Lenormand, runes, pendulum, throwing bones, automatic writing, and even Ouija boards. I know they seem like some toy, but you know they can be used for legitimate reasons if you know how to use them. Now, one of the most important things I would say in the past couple of years of me working with spirits in a more focused level is definitely, you know, keeping that relationship with them consistent. You know, just because it now is a time of Samhain shouldn't be the only time that you're working with spirits or even working with your ancestors or any type of deities or genius loci that you're involving in your practice. This should be a consistent and constant thing that you are building and developing. You know, in my episodes with the elemental spirits, it was sort of an intro into learning how to initially come into contact with these spirits, you know, learning what they like, learning what their name is, and how to best commune with them. You know, certain spirits have different needs. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, just like people, you have to keep these relationships consistent. And one of the ways to do this, you know, essentially is setting up an altar to them and having things on that altar that represent them, you know, whether this is a statue or just a candle, or just having specific offerings to them. In the case of your ancestor altar, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, all of your ancestors. You know, we're always going to have people in our past that, you know, wouldn't necessarily agree with the things that you're doing or how you're living your life, and you don't necessarily have to include them. You know, it's, you want to be able to connect with the ones that are looking out for you and everything that, you know, you want in your future. You know, in cases like that, you do have to be specific in who exactly it is that you're calling upon. You know, if you leave it open to any ancestors and all ancestors, they may not all have your best interests at heart, or they may have very opposing views to what it is that you are needing in your life at the moment. Another way of, you know, starting to begin this practice of interacting with spirits is interact with the ones that you have closest in your astrological chart, you know, the ones that have the most influence in you. And this can be a very simple thing. Like for me, I'm a Taurus. And so when I first started looking into like the Key of Solomon and the Solomonic Pentacles, I initially just went for the Venus Pentacles because I felt that those would be the easiest ones for me to connect to and to be able to draw those spirits in because I was born during the time of Venus. And it can be simple little things like that that you can, you know, begin those relationships with, and they're going to have the most easiest connection to you. You know, you need to also increase the way in which you communicate with these spirits. And what I mean by that is, you know, learning how to psychically expand your state of awareness and learning how exactly you do personally communicate with spirits. And, you know, not everybody, just because somebody is psychic doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that they can hear spirits or that they can see spirits or they can do all of the above. Typically, a lot of people, especially people in the occult, you know, they have not necessarily a predetermined, like I'm of the opinion that you can learn how to use any of the type of clairs to best enhance your own practice. but a lot of people tend to have one specific thing that they're best able to do. Like for me, my thing tends to be more along the lines of psychometry. So if I go into an antique shop, for example, you know, I'm touching these objects. And most of the time I'm not touching the objects because being in an antique shop is very overwhelming for me. Just because there's so much, I feel like there's so much coming at me. But if I want to focus on something, I'll pick something up and, you know, ask the spirit of this object to essentially show me its history, show me how it's been interacted with. So as you can see, like, there's many different variety of ways that you can interact with a variety of different spirits, whether it be the spirit of an object, the spirit of a plant. And working with plants, something that I've, again, as a Taurus, most Tumblr things would tell you that I'm a green witch or whatever. But in working with plants, it's best to, you know, connect with the spirit of the plant. And you can do this by watering them and talking to them, but also trying to divine with them, you know, using your different methods that we've talked about to connect with these spirits. And I think, you know, taking on little things is easy as possible. Don't just initially just try to go into the Guisha. I mean, which you can do, you know, fuck around and find out, right? But if you want to go, I guess, the safer route, an easier way is just like to ease your things with things that don't have very high energy spirits. So like plants. I mean, plants also can have very high energy spirits depending on the plant, but you know, you can pick a simple flower like a rose and develop your relationship with that spirit, or go with the elementals, as I've suggested before. And always remember to trust your intuition when you're working with spirits. You know, for example, the past couple of weeks, I've been doing a month-long ritual every day to Hecate and, you know, developing my relationship with her, specifically with her, sort of focusing on her epithets and trying to do it in a way to essentially give back and, you know, constant offerings and meditations and doing something that I'm doing in honor of her specifically. And the other day, I, you know, in the middle of the ritual, I got the impression to take out my Lenormand cards. And these are cards that I've used once before when I first got them, and I haven't really touched them since. I don't really know how to read them specifically, but it was very, I don't know, it was just like a gut feeling of, I need to get this out right now. And it felt very much like she was just telling me, do this right now. You have some decisions that you're trying to make. Figure it the fuck out. And so I got the cards out and I got a very definitive answer to something that I'm dealing with personally. And, you know, it can be little things like that. You know, always trust your gut when you feel like these spirits are giving or telling you something. And, you know, let them guide you. Let them do what they're trying to do. I understand that sometimes there can be moments where, you know, you feel like, oh, you know, this is crazy. And what if I listen to them and it all goes wrong? I think at some point, you know, you really have to, this was hard for me to grasp too, because I don't really like letting other people make decisions for me. I like for everything to be my own decision. So in giving over that power to her, in trusting these answers that she's giving me in a decision that I have going forward, it's also building that trust between you and, in this case, the deity. And I think it's, you know, it's always important to be constantly improving that trust, improving that bond, you know, so that you guys can have a better relationship and work well together. And if you'd like to learn more on working and communing with spirits, I recommend checking out Living Spirits, A Guide to Magic in a World of Spirits by BJ Swain, Psychic Witch by Matt Aron. And this one specifically I do recommend because enhancing your own psychic abilities can help you interact with these spirits, because how are you going to be able to hear them if you don't enhance your own psychic abilities? Another one would be A Witch's Book of Spirits by Devin Hunter. And The Secrets of Solomon is also good for interacting with a specific spirit court, as it's called. And that one's by Joseph Peterson. And we also have this upcoming book called Consorting with Spirits, Your Guide to Working with Invisible Allies by Jason Miller, which is a title I'm very excited about and will be getting released in May of next year, May 1st of next year. So definitely be on the lookout for that. I know this is a little bit short notice, but we have something coming out tomorrow, actually, on October 30th, 2001, at 8 p.m. It's a live stream discussing many of the same things that we're talking about here, spirit communication. And I'll be sure to put in the link into the description so that you guys are able to attend. It's $10. A friend of mine just told me about it, and he's apparently working this event as well. And so definitely, if you get the chance, check that out. Hopefully they have it recorded, so you guys can check it out at some other point. I hope you all enjoy this episode, and be sure to check out Feast of Torches podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and you can find some of my intro poems now on TikTok. If you would like to offer your support to subscribe to my Patreon, which I also have a Discord attached to, and hoping to start a book club with you guys as well, hail and farewell, and I hope you all have a blessed Samhain.